You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't really care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. 2-year old thing.
That's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th dimension chess right here.
Yeah,
maybe.
I cheated
I'm
a little bit. Yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. You know what that music means. It means we are wrapping up the MLS weekend with me, David Goss, out in the octagon. Matt, the armchair analyst Doyle, joining us in just a little bit. A couple of Chicago Fire players dropping by the office. They had a game on Sunday, and they stuck around. Just, you know, do us a solid. So we have Johan Kabelhoff and Arturo Alvarez, who will join us for a fun conversation here in studio. We always like those. Those are really enjoyable. I just want to tease something as well, Dave. We had a nice conversation with a couple Sporting KC guys the other day, and we'll have that for you on Thursday.
Roger, we've got so many friends right now. Everyone's coming by to say hi to Andrew Wiebe. Mm-hmm.
They are.
It's a good time.
You too.
Yeah, but I'm part of it. I'm not the main. I'm not the main squeeze.
Oh, don't discount yourself here, Dave. Jordi Quintilla and Roger Espinoza will be with us on Thursday, so look forward to that. Matt, look, let's just get right into it. I mean, it's what everybody's talking about. Darlington Nagbe, Nigel De Jong, another American midfield prospect going down under a dangerous, terrible, vicious, bad tackle from Nigel De Jong. Nagbe in the 72nd minute, kind of pushing into the midfield, a little bit of a long touch. It was a 50-50 ball, in my opinion. The tackle comes over the ball. The tackle comes directly into Nagby's left ankle. It's straight leg. He immediately goes down, is waving his arms. One of those moments that I think a lot of people will remember. You know, maybe it won't be like the Steve Zakuani moment. We're not yet sure what the injury is, and I certainly think the severity here is not to the same degree, and I don't think the tackle is anywhere to the same degree. But really, a tough moment for U.S. soccer fans, MLS fans, and I think just fans of the beautiful game in general. Matt, I'm going to give you the floor, and I want your take on this tackle and what we should be thinking coming out of it.
Well, it was a long touch, but I don't think it was a 50-50 ball. I think it was a 70-30 ball at best. And this is, well, first of all, Steve Zakuani, who's still tight with Darlington Nagbe, they spent a year together at Akron. Zakuani tweeted
sometime at the Timbers as well.
Right. That it's not a broken leg. So that is hopefully the worst case ruled out. Now that's obviously not official. We haven't heard anything specific from the Timbers. It does not rule out ligament or tendon damage. It seems likely that Nagbe is going to be out for a long time, whether that means, 2 months or 6 months, or, you know, it seems we're not going to be seeing much of him for some time to come.
He did leave the field, just so you know out there. He left the field on a stretcher after being hurt. He then returned to the bench and had a large ice pack, was not able to put any sort of weight on that left leg, and then he was wheeled off the pitch in a wheelchair and then exited to the bus on crutches. So sorry to interrupt there, Matt. I had to get those.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It needs to be recapped like that. And look, this is par for the course with Nigel De Jong. He's a butcher, and he has been for his entire career. He's broken two legs, Stuart Holden back in March of 2010 and Hatem Ben Arfa later on that year. In between, he karate kicked Xabi Alonso in the chest, not in the stomach, in the chest in the World Cup final. Wasn't sent off for any of those three challenges, and that is the canard that people who defended this signing have trotted out. You call him a dirty player, but he only has two red cards in his career, and I don't know why, because these are all, and to, you know, and this was another one where he got away with a clear red card tackle, and so we can keep saying, oh yeah, Nigel De Jong, he's only had two red cards. It was a leg breaker. I don't know how Nagby's leg isn't broken, and it's the exact type of tackle that pro should be cracking down on, that refs should call red card every time. And it's the exact reason that we've had tighter officiating since 2011.
If you were on Twitter after this game or during this game, you experienced many fiery takes. It was an interesting time to be on soccer Twitter. The Portland Timbers and the LA Galaxy official accounts were sniping back and forth at each other. Of course, everyone was kind of in a state of panic, Dave, just because this is a guy who, A, is a star in MLS, but B, is a rising star for the national team. C, as Doyle said, it was kind of like, oh God, not this again. Not another U.S. midfield prospect going down under a terrible tackle from Nigel Young. Now, I have talked to some people today, and there have been a lot of people that kind of stand where Doyle stands, and I think this is a terrible challenge, and it was bad. It was really bad. That has to be wiped out of the game. But I've talked to some people today that have professional playing experience that have said, if this isn't Nigel Young and Darlington Nagbe, we're not making this as nearly a big a deal. And they actually didn't think it was that bad of a challenge. What about you?
It didn't seem like a tackle. He stomped on him. How is that not bad? What is he trying to stomp on top of the ball? Like, he's trying to put space between him and Nagbe so that he can win the ball. He stomps on Nagbe.
Right.
It's not a tackle. It's not a studs up tackle. He's not going sliding in. He stomps on an opposing player. That might be true that if it wasn't De Jong and Nagbe, but if De Jong didn't kick people in the chest and break people's legs, then he wouldn't have a reputation for what he does.
There is an aspect of an earned reputation. Certainly.
And the earned is because he does these things and he continues to do them. And if you're going to continue to do them, then people are going to continue to complain about you. We're going to talk about this a little bit more in the mailbag. But we got an email from someone, and this comment we've gotten a few times. And it's actually anger and frustration with Bruce Arena and not with Nigel De Jong. And we heard it a little bit when they signed him. People were upset that he brought him into this league. And people are putting this at Bruce Arena saying, there's a reason this guy has a reputation. You brought him in to do something. And he came in and played the way he plays. And this is his style of game, which I don't know if that's a real thing. Because this isn't, oh, I'm a tough player. I'm an old school player. These are dirty tackles.
His point was, after this match, speaking to the media, speaking to the LAGalaxy.com staff, that he goes into every tackle hard, and this is part of the game. Here's a quote for you. It was a 50-50 ball, De Jong said. Normally, I always have those balls. I went over to the ball and catch the ball a little bit and catch most of his ankle. It was a pity, you know what I mean? It was never my intention to hurt him. I certainly don't think that there's intent there, but when you're going into tackles with this sort of velocity and in many cases recklessness and just the potential for violence, I'm not sure that I'm one of those people out there that says, hey, there has to be an intent. Like, there's a consequence, and that should be enough to detract. We'll see what happens here. Darlington Nagbe's status, his health, has not been made public yet, as Matt said. Still trying to figure out on that side of things what's going to happen. I also expect that there will be a disciplinary committee hearing about this. I expect that process has already started. Any thoughts out there, guys, about what should happen in that disciplinary committee? What should be considered, Matt? Because I think there are some precedents here, but also some of those precedents, I think, in the past have had some weight applied to them based on the severity of the injury.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I agree with that, but I'm open to the argument, certainly. I think that the fact that it wasn't a soccer play is what needs to be taken first and foremost. If you look back 3 weeks ago, De Jong cleared out Kip Colvey of San Jose, and it was an orange card, and it was one that he should have been maybe retroactively banned a game for. But he got away with it because it was pretty much a soccer play. This was not, and it was. It's of a piece with his body of work.
So what would you give him? What would you? I'm having you guess here. What will happen and what would you do?
I think that the disciplinary committee will give him somewhere between 3 and 5 games. Somewhere 3 to 5 games, because there is only one integer between 3 and 5. what I would do is, however long Nagbe is out, Jong would get that plus 2 games, so that, you know, I understand that you can't do eye for an eye in terms of on-field discipline, but you can in terms of suspension length. And I just want to point out one more thing, that this is what Stu Holden said last night after the game. in talking about DeJong. He talked about, this is DeJong talking about breaking Stu Holden's leg. He talked about being in a dark period in that part of his career, and the media was on his back. He was under a lot of pressure on the field and was making challenges. So this is a man who has broken people's legs before and blamed it on the media. I think that type of, hey, you know, things just happen, it's not really my fault, I think that needs to be taken into consideration. This is not someone who has accepted responsibility for the other careers he has almost ended. So I think that it's something that the disciplinary committee absolutely needs to look at and take into account and drop the frickin' hammer.
So before we go, I will say one thing. On that quote, Matt, the one place I would depart from you is that that's a little bit of telephone there. We're not getting the full story. We're not party to that conversation. But I do think it is important to point out that Nigel DeJong apologizes to Stu Holden before this game, goes out, makes a tackle that perhaps, at least in the immediacy of his career, puts Darlington Nagbe on the shelf, and we're not sure what will happen long-term with him. And he did go over and say sorry after the game as well and shake Nagby's hand. Not that that necessarily excuses the challenge in any case. We will see what the disciplinary committee does. We will see what Darlington Nagbe's status is. This is a story that I think everybody in MLS circles and U.S. soccer circles will be watching with a lot of apprehension, I think, right now is probably the right word. We didn't mention the result. I just realized that. It was a 1-1 draw, Galaxy in Portland. Nat Borchers with an own goal to take three away from the Timbers. Giovanni Dos Santos back, but not really effective in this one. Fernando Adi continues to be a very, very effective center forward for the Timbers, but ultimately this one's all about Nagbe and DeJong. Philadelphia 2, Orlando 1. We're going to take it all the way back to Friday. This was a good game, and it came on a goal by Tranquilo Barneta. The winner did, a free kick, kind of a carbon copy of a Kleberson goal that Joe Bendick watched go into, not the top corner, but this one certainly was, off the crossbar and down and in. There were some questions about offside, though. Did you have those, Matt? Because I look at this play and I think, how is that not offside? The wall, almost like a secondary wall from the Union, is in front of Bendick and then pushes up at the last second to try to get onside.
Yeah, and Jim Curtin said after the game, we put the wall there to be a distraction, to give the goalkeeper something else to think about. Now, whether the wall's there or not, Barnett's goal is going in. That was absolutely unsavable, period. But this is something that, to me, should have been offside. But to Philadelphia's credit, they realized that refs don't call that. They picked it up from FC Midtjylland, the Norwegian team that played, I think, Manchester United, was it, in the Europa Cup. And United has brought it back to England under Van Gaal. So it's a tactic that is becoming more and more prevalent. But to me, it's the definition of offside. If you have a wall 10 yards in front of you as the goalkeeper and 6 yards offside, like that, of course they're interfering with the play. It's bizarre to me that that doesn't get flagged every time.
I thought the same thing when I saw it. It is a Danish team, FC Midtjylland, so just a little bit of a correction there.
My Scandinavian geography.
Yes. You will want to watch instant replay, though, on MLSsoccer.com to check out Brian Dunce's take on this one. Word on the street here in the MLS digital offices ahead of this time was that perhaps they were onside when the ball was struck. Just barely, maybe, or very, very close. If that's the case, they would be onside, but I would tune into that to see what happens. A big win for the Union, though. They've now hit second in the standings. They've been kind of up there the whole season. CJ Sapong is now the most hyped striker in MLS, thanks to our friend Matt Doyle. So a good run for the Union. Adrian Winter had a good game. Keegan Rosenberry kind of held him in check. Adrian Winter was an unknown when he entered this league, and he's a scrappy player. I'm starting to like him. He's scrappy with skills. So the Orlando not happy with this one. Philadelphia very, very happy. We'll move on to Sunday, though, and we'll start with the first game of the day. We'll start Houston and Seattle. Giles Barnes, Dave, cool as you like. What is Seattle doing on defense? Barnes scoring on a throw-in that gets played back to the thrower. Easy cross. Nobody marks. Flips it in the net.
Yeah, Seattle's really in good, decent form right now.
Yeah,
and they were able to get a tie, and I don't see it still from Seattle. And we were talking about it downstairs. They bring in Hercules Gomez and
Olix Anderson.
We think it's Olix.
Yeah, it's Olix. I know it's Olix.
Olix Anderson. They give them a little bit of a spark, but the starting 11 doesn't have.
Where was the spark before that?
Exactly.
And it was extinguished.
There was nothing going for them. And, you know, Houston's been okay this year, but you're not going there assuming you have no chance at getting a win. You think you start that game with a little bit of confidence, and they absolutely did not.
Houston not able to close out games this year. It's the third time they've been leading and failed to win. Chad Marshall with the equalizer in this one. Olix Anderson gets the byline, whips it across. Do they have to – I mean, is this a matter of – we've talked about the transfer window. Yeah, it should have been cleared probably. Okay. But a little bit nicked by Joe Willis, and then Rodriguez biffs it, and it goes in easily there. Seattle, are they panicking yet, Matt? When does panic happen?
I don't think panic happens yet. I think you probably have 10-12 game cushion in MLS before you suddenly really need to take a look in the mirror and
even if the form is bad. Because that's the issue. The result was fine, but they're just not showing signs of progress and improvement.
Well, I think they did over the last 15 minutes. Once Hercules Gomez came on, they opened up some space and they were able to get the ball in some dangerous spots and eventually capitalized. And they have, I think, a little more padding because the defense has been pretty good. They struggled a little bit in the first half because the game got frenetic and they, anytime the midfield turned it over, it was emergency defense. But they figured that out in the second half and actually did a good job. But look, I actually think that the answers are there. Seattle had plenty of opportunities to play that last ball. They just didn't have the right talent to do it. And if you follow Chris Henderson on Twitter, you see that he's traveling the globe looking for new signings and has been everywhere from Chile to Buenos Aires to Brazil to this past weekend. He was at the Villarreal match in Spain. Oh, wow. So they're going to get somebody. The only question is whether it happens in the next 3 weeks or whether they have to wait for the summer transfer window. And I will grant you, if they have to wait till the summer transfer window, that might be too late.
So the four teams at the bottom of the Western Conference right now, very bottom, Seattle Sounders. Second to bottom, Portland Timbers, defending MLS Cup champion. Then the Dynamo, then the Vancouver Whitecaps. Three of those four teams, of course, playoff teams. A little bit strange. It's kind of going that way in both conferences right now. That Vancouver Whitecaps team fell on their face this weekend at RFK, a 4-0 beatdown. DC didn't go get them in Chile. They didn't go to Buenos Aires, although I guess way back in the day, Fabian Espíndola with two goals, Alvaro Sabarrio with two goals, had some nice moves from that young Argentine playmaker DC picked up in the offseason. How, Doyle, how does this happen? Because these are the results in this league that just make people throw up their hands and say, I'll never be able to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, Espíndola was really good, and we've seen this over the past couple of years. When he's healthy and engaged, he can be a difference maker at a very high level. But Patrick Bjarko was as well. He was, for the first hour, he was the best player on the field, and he created that first goal. And once that happened, you could see Vancouver's body language was just terrible. The shoulder slumped, and oh no, here we go again, and it sort of just cascaded from there. Look, DC have some guys who can get it done, and in this day they did. But I do think a lot of it came down to just a lack of engagement from the Caps. I think of all the teams that are struggling right now, they're the ones that that concern me the most because the body language just is not there.
Nobody wanted to close down Acosta on one of those goals. Keon Froh's just kind of watching him stroll into the 18. That's not a good sign. Caps fans, I want to hear from you. I want to know what you're thinking right now because for the past 2 years, it's been, hey, the young guys are going to come good. The young guys are going to come good. The young guys are going to come good. A tough moment right now for Vancouver. RSL, the only undefeated team left in MLS, 1-0 against Colorado. Zach McMath with a blunder, we'll call it, comes rushing out of his net, basically gives Joao Plata a goal in this one.
Wait, that's Zach McMath's blunder?
I think so.
Oh, absolutely.
What's he doing?
His teammate taps it around him, though.
Why is
he out there?
Okay, right. I'm just saying that's 100% on him?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it's like 95% at best.
Amateur goalkeepers, hit us up.
Yeah. He comes out. If his teammate doesn't touch that ball, he clears it.
Yeah, but
maybe he's coming out because Joao Plata is the most dangerous player in open field.
Or communication was bad,
yes,
or whatever.
And that's
it might
why,
be
100%
wait a minute,
his
why
fault.
Is he being, why is he playing sweeper keeper when you have two defenders back?
Because he probably thinks Joao Plata is going to beat those two defenders. Why? Because he's done it to every other team. Now, I agree, communication is 100% on him because he's the one looking up the field and you have to communicate as people are backtracking, but...
Look, I would love to hear any sort of perspective on that. I'm going to be on Doyle's side here. I think that's a blunder on McMath. Been a tough time for him since Howard came. But a big win for RSL, Dave. Aaron Mond, Justin Glad in central defense. That's not a pairing that most people would think would get you these sorts of results. You're a Mobsisian. Didn't score in this one, should've.
Yeah, scored an onside goal.
Beautiful goal. Probably. Should not have been called back. He was onside. The freeze frame showed it.
This wasn't pretty. It hasn't been pretty yet from RSL. Doyle's mentioned it. At some point, they're going to have to figure out how to play with the ball and control games. But for right now, they don't have to because it's working.
It'll
one.
Do.
And two, I think you're still trying to get everyone to settle in and get comfortable together and figure out your identity. So if you can go undefeated while figuring out your identity, I think you're in a pretty good position. Plata and Barreto, once again, are dangerous. No Javi Morales, and they're still able to create two chances, I guess you could say. Yeah. Almost own goal, as well as Mavsisian scoring an onside goal. He should have had one right at the final whistle as well. He headed one right at McMath. And I think he's been good even though he hasn't scored. He's set guys up. He's held the ball up at times. He controls the center backs. So he's been a good sign.
Yeah, you feel like the flood's going to come with him. FC Dallas 2, San Jose 2. This is an interesting game. San Jose couldn't hold on to the leads that they got. Man, Quincy time. Keeps it rolling. Two assists in this one. An own goal from Bernardes is really what killed him here. A really weird own goal. I'm not sure what he's doing there. It looked like just kind of a biffed header that goes in his own net. Tommy Thompson, playing central midfield, had a very, very nice game as well. Complete coverage of this one highlights everything you need at MLSsoccer.com. Doyle, I want to ask you about the Crew. You kind of had surmised that maybe this season might be tough for them, that maybe the message would fall on deaf ears. What's the problem here? They lose again. Montreal 2, Columbus nothing. They don't have any wins.
Yeah, and they don't have any answers right now. They're not generating anything up the center of the field. Teams are just packing the box against them and saying, we're not going to let you complete crosses to Kai Kamara's head. And that's been enough to slow down the Crew's attack. And then on the flip side, they are just so still, so untidy with the ball, playing it out of the back. And you do kind of admire that because they know who they are and they want to be the team that builds from the back. But when teams are sitting on you like they've been sitting on the Crew this year, that can lead to turnovers and that leads to goals against. And right now, that leads to losses.
Yes, it does. Montreal, the big win. Drogba coming this week, and you can bet we will talk about that extensively on Thursday. The Red Bulls.
And Harry Ship returning.
And Harry Ship,
to Chicago.
He is. That's a big one as well. Red Bulls. He said he was looking forward to that, right? He said he circled that when we talked to him.
Better believe it.
Best believe it. Red Bulls, once again, they're struggling. At home again, Sporting KC come in. 2-0 winners in this match. Benny Fellhaber with a big goal to start things off. A really, really nice goal. And then Dom Dwyer, just beasts. Chris Duval.
He didn't even beast him that bad.
Yeah, but
it was
mental.
So
he just took advantage
maybe,
of it.
Yeah, Duval was so passive in the situation. It was like he was marking him, you know, out on the sideline and not in his own box. Just, oh, he'll turn. It's fine. Someone else will clean. I don't know what the thought process was, and it clearly didn't end well.
Did not work. SKC with a lot of injuries here. BWP missed a penalty in this one, but Red Bulls right now, four shutouts.
BWP is struggling. He's had a tough last few weeks. Obviously, the PK doesn't help. But he's not getting any impact from Sam and Grella next to him. And I think it means that, one, he's not getting as many opportunities.
Wait a minute. He had 10 shots.
Yeah, but are they quality? And
I agree.
And last week against New England as well, he had two or three really good looks. I agree. I just don't think he's getting any help. First of all, Lloyd Sam was a goal scorer and Grella for this team last year. Sam's been for 2 years. And I just think it's a lot of pressure on him, and it's not being evened out in any way. And they don't have that impact, whether it's off the high press or taking guys one-on-one that they were clearly relying on last year.
Yeah, there's also a little bit of lack of defensive organization, I think. You saw that on the first goal from Fellhaber. That pressure just completely out of sorts, opens up the whole field, and KC tore them up in a big win for them. They were very happy with that one. Toronto FC were pretty happy with the 1-1 draw they got in New England. Kellen Rowe with a really, really nice header to start things off. And then, of course, Jovinko gets the goal to equalize. Josie Altidore with the setup on that. The Revs were unhappy because they said they had a goal that should have counted. The referee said, hey, that crossed the in line. There's some differing opinions about that one as well. They were also unhappy about some PK shots ahead of that Toronto FC goal. But Toronto FC just continues to pick up points on their road trip. Congratulations to them on another result. We're going to go away for just a second. We'll be right back. We've got Johan Kappelhoff and Arturo Alvarez waiting for you on the other side.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
It's Friday, so we can't complain too much. And
looking forward to a big game
on Sunday.
Sunday
against who we playing?
Who are we playing? Chicago.
I don't know.
I think Chicago.
We don't really care who we're playing because we're about to get that dub no matter what.
No matter what.
You're listening to the voices of NYCFC's Mikey Lopez and Kyrie Shelton. This was from a video that was posted at Fox Soccer, that kind of one of those selfie videos that players do ahead of games, help hype up a game. This game was on Fox Sports 1, and then they didn't get to play in the game, Dave, because Patrick Vieira was not happy with that video.
We believe he was not happy with that video. He said, I was not really pleased about the message on the internet about the video. I think that was disrespectful to Chicago, and that is not the message I want from the players. He did not say which video.
Sure.
So a few reporters have said this is the video. We don't know another video that's out there, but we don't actually have official confirmation.
Seems like that's probably the video. But that seems a little bit heavy-handed to me. But if I had to guess, it's probably the end of a long line of either warnings or requests to take things a little bit more seriously. I don't know. It's all guesswork right now. But this is one of those bizarre MLS stories.
It is so weird.
That just, it's hard to believe that someone would get suspended for a game for something like that, Doyle.
Yeah, it is. But I think you probably hit the nail on the head. Both Mikey Lopez and Kyrie Shelton are known for being very confident young gentlemen. And sometimes that type of confidence can spill over and maybe be less than productive in a team setting. And my guess is that is what Patrick Vieira was really suspending them for. But again, that is just a guess. It might have been something as simple as he didn't like the video. You don't really know.
Not sure. Any thoughts out there for NYCFC fans or just your own thoughts? Maybe you've had something like this happen within a team dynamic of your own. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. We are now joined by Johan Kappelhoff of the Fire, as well as Arturo Alvarez. A 0-0 draw for them at Yankee Stadium. Guys, the result that maybe New York wanted, but a point. You guys happy with that? All good?
Yeah, I think a point on the road is always welcome. And last night it was a tough game, but I think even the goal, I don't know if it was offsides or not. I really haven't seen the play yet. But overall, I think it was a good, a fair result.
Did you think it was offside?
It was close. I don't know. I haven't seen it back, but it was close, I think.
Well, I'm just going to say I thought it was offside just by the most narrow of margins. One of those things where it really is a judgment call. The referee has to make a decision. Is this guy affecting the play?
Yeah. Who was offside, in your opinion?
I think you were.
You don't have to say this guy. You can point.
Yeah, I guess okay. I can't point in the radio sphere. Yeah, I mean, it was close. What's it like to play on that field? It's so small. It's got the edge there with the infield ground. What was that like for you guys?
I think, one half of the field it's decent, it's okay to play in, but obviously once you get to the other side where it's patched because of like the dirt or whatever, it makes it a little bit difficult. It's bumpy, it's a different type of grass, but overall I think at the end of the day we all play on that. You can't put any excuses, so you just got to take care of business.
For both of you, the experience going into the game, I mean, you've never played at Yankee Stadium before.
No.
you're not an American, so you're not a baseball fan. What was it like,
maybe
though?
Maybe he is a baseball fan.
Are you a baseball fan?
No.
That's fine.
Figured as much.
What was it like, though, the experience of going into that building, the history obviously there, the different fans, it's a different layout. What was the afternoon like?
No, for me, I think, you know, obviously I've played in a lot of different venues around, you know, the world. And yesterday I had to get some video of it. You know, it's the Yankee Stadium. You know, it has a lot of new history. Obviously, it's a new stadium, but the club, I mean, the organization, it's something that as an American you know about. So it was great. It's great to play there. And so, you know, I mean, it was a pretty cool experience.
Did you guys explain to him what was happening?
Did you just like stay up the home plate and get a couple hacks?
No. I know about the stadium. Of course, everybody knows around the world the Yankee Stadium is very famous. But yeah, the size of the field was a bit strange. You know, it's small, but you have to be more direct to the goal. You know, and building out from the back is a little bit difficult because the size of the field is small. But it was a great experience to play in the stadium, and it's a really nice stadium.
Of course, the travel there, I mean, probably more than you ever would do in the Netherlands. What are some of the adjustments that you've had to make coming to MLS? What are the things you look at and say, this is different? This is not something that I've been accustomed to in my previous playing career.
The press can come in the dressing rooms. That was strange. Yeah. That was strange. And during the break, I saw that players can be interviewed. That was also a strange thing for me to see. But traveling, you have to get used to that. But it's going good.
So let's talk a little bit about how you guys got to the Fire, because this is the first time in here with this team, or at least right now with Paunovic, and obviously Arturo, you're an MLS veteran from way back, and we'll talk about some of your travels here in just a second, but. Why MLS, Johan? What brought you here? Why the Fire?
It was all of a sudden, end of January, my agent told me Chicago Fire is interested. And in the beginning, I was not like, okay, I will do that. After a while, I spoke with Paolo and Nelson and searched some information on the internet and everything. I was convinced to come. So,
What was the convincing factor? What was the sell?
First of all, the trainer had a lot of confidence in me to come, and it's a great opportunity to see a lot of different cultures and the United States, different parts of the United States. So that's in a private way, like besides football, it's great to see a lot of different things in the world.
Did you have any friends that have ever played in the U.S.? Did you have anyone you could ask about what it's like?
Yeah, Colin John, who also played for Chicago Fire. Mm-hmm. I asked him some things about the club and MLS.
And what was it? Were you ready to leave Holland? Or if this offer hadn't come in, were you looking to move? Or was it whatever came up?
Yeah, that was the great... Of course, in the summer is the best moment when the season ends to move. But it was the year for me for a new adventure, a new club. There was the time to go for me. I played there for 4.5 years, and I would have go this summer to another club. So now it's in the winter, and I'm happy to be here.
I heard you're probably not hitting the nightlife in Chicago. I heard you're a father, a new father. You got a little...
Yeah.
Well, not little. Eunice said, "Yeah, your baby's huge, big old 8 months old."
Yeah, 8 months old. Yeah, my son is also in Chicago now, and I'm happy that my family is here, and it's also a great experience for us as a family to be here, to be in the United States. Yeah,
the summers are going to be a lot better. Let me tell you, the summers in Chicago are incredible.
I heard so much. Yeah, so I'm waiting for it.
You're probably dying.
I hope so. I mean,
you're a Dallas guy, right?
Houston. Yeah.
It's the same thing. Texas. I was in Hungary and it was cold, but man, Chicago was something else.
Yeah, the other day with the, you know, it was just, what was that?
Blizzard? I don't know what it
blizzard,
was.
Blizzard, then no blizzard, exactly. Then 5 minutes later, blizzard again.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the craziest weathers I've ever played in. So
you were in the league for years. You're an American. what was your thought of Chicago and the Chicago Fire when you were back in the league before now returning and playing for the team?
Chicago's always been a good team, you know, always had good attacking players. I remember, obviously, back in the day, Razov, you know, Beasley was there as well. Damani Rolfe had a really good year. I'm saying that because we played the Fire in the MLS Cup with San Jose.
Right.
And so, and then they had Cuauhtemoc, you know, they've always had some good teams. And to know that the last 2 years, it's been a really, you know, bad two seasons for the club, it's just kind of surprising, you know. But hopefully, you know, we're here to change things around.
What did you leave MLS for in the first place? Kind of take us through those couple of years when you were maybe outside the MLS spotlight in Portugal, and then Videoton, which I've said that in a Spanish accent. I'm not sure why.
That's how they say it over there.
Really?
Too.
Yeah. I felt like I needed to.
Yeah, that's how they say it. It's fun. It's weird, but yeah, it's Videoton. You know, in 2012, I left. I went to Portugal. I was there with Passos de Ferreira, which is it's a small club who just kind of tries to fight to stay in first division. And we actually ended up finishing third that year. It was great. You know, it's something, you know, we had a good coach, really good players that the year after left to you know, went on to bigger clubs and whatnot in Portugal and also abroad. But, you know, it was a great experience. And then I went on loan to Videoton, and then they ended up buying me out, and I signed a new contract with them. And I mean, to be honest, I didn't know anything about Hungary. I knew that Videoton was in the Europa League group stage right before I got there. And so that kind of made me go there. And I was in Budapest, and I loved it. So it's a great city.
Yeah. What's Hungary like?
It's amazing, man. It's Budapest is it's the capital, and, you know, you have the Danube River going through the city. It's divided into two. You have the Buda side and the Pest side. Just like any capital else in the world, you know, you have everything you could, you know, you need. And it's a generation, it's a younger generation that's starting to, you know, kind of be a little bit more liberal per se. You know, a lot of the young generation speaks English. And so, but, you know, the older generation is really to themselves. But other than that, I enjoyed my time there.
So why back to MLS? Why Fire? Was it just time to come home? You felt like the calling was there, or?
Yeah, I think, we won the league last year in Hungary, and it was great. I was happy with that. And then
how'd you celebrate?
Just
parade.
Like, any other? Yeah, we were in, you know, middle. It was a small town where the team was from, Székes Fehérvár, and just in the middle of the city, just all the fans came in and celebrating with us. And yeah, it was great.
That name just came right off your lips. I have a note here to say, ask him how to say the name of the city this is in. You just.
Yeah. And I picked up, you know, maybe like three words while I was there in Hungary. And it was difficult. It's a difficult language. But it was a good experience. And then I think it was my time to come back to MLS. It was good to see that, you know, MLS games were being shown live in Hungary, you know, something that,
wow.
That I was like, I was excited to see MLS, you know, being, you know, able to do that. And so I was like, you know, I want to come back.
We actually have a huge fan in Hungary who sends us emails all the time, who's like the biggest Peter Vermees fan in the history of the world. And he's always like, you know, he's always warning us, hey, this guy's coming, this is happening.
Nice. And last year, Christian Nemeth came, and he kept telling us, and we ignored him. And then Christian Nemeth was really good.
Yeah.
I spoke to him right before he signed with Kansas City in Hungary. One of my teammates was his really good friend. And
nice.
He was kind of asking me questions about the league, and I think he enjoyed his time.
So a conversation like that, and you had it, you said with Colin John, what are the big sells?
What questions are you like? What questions did you ask when you talked to Collins? And what questions is a guy like Nemeth asking? Like what?
I asked him about the flights, how long it is, and the level of the league. The club, of course, the stadium, these kind of things, how's the city and everything. Yeah.
What matters to you in a club? Like when you want to know whether that club's going to be the right place for you, what are the things that you need? Like that you need to feel, or that the things that they have?
Of course, the facilities, the stadium, the fans, of course, and these are the things that is important for me. Yeah.
What did he ask you about?
Yeah, it was to be honest, it's pretty much similar questions all around. You know, obviously the big thing is the traveling. You know, in countries in Europe, you take the bus everywhere, and not unless you're playing European soccer, but other than that, it was the traveling. You know, the stadiums are state-of-the-art stadiums here in MLS, and so that's always a good selling point. You know, good crowds, and so, you know, little things like that. But overall, it's similar questions.
You were gone for a few years. The league changes so much because it's so young. What have you noticed now that you've been back? Or nothing.
No. I definitely think you know, the marketing side of the league is just, it's, I think they're doing a really good job with it. You know, television, it's key. I think it's great that, you know, the rest of the world gets to see MLS games live. And especially for me, I started in the league back in 2003 when none of that was around. So it's good to see.
So both of you kind of have different sides of the international question. Of course, Arturo, El Salvador, you've been with them for a while now, what, 40-something caps? And then, Johan, I heard that maybe you're looking perhaps at Ghana being an option. What is that about? Because in David Akam, you've got a teammate who maybe can answer some of those questions for you.
Yeah, of course. But first of all, I have to do a good job in the club. I have to play good games before I can play for Ghana. But there were some contacts. I had some contacts with the Ghana national team in the past. It didn't get through at the time, but maybe if I do good here, then they will call me up. I don't know.
And that's through your mom's side?
Yeah, through my mom's side. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Did you grow up watching the Black Stars? Where were your allegiances as you grew up? Were you kind of a dual countryman?
Yeah, I was a dual countryman. I watched, the Dutch team and the Ghanaian team. Africa Cups and World Cup, I was for both, so I had more chance to win.
Tough for some of your American teammates. Yeah, Ghana, a little bit of a tough match for the U.S. Yeah. Arturo, you're still alive, I think, in World Cup qualifying, but it's a little bit tough right now. Mexico and Canada and down at the bottom with 2 points right now in round four.
Yeah, no, it's been a tough start. And, you know, it's you know, the CONCACAF, it keeps getting harder and harder, you know. But, you know, when I first joined the Salvador national team, we were in the hex. So it was great. You know, we were right there pushing for it. But, you know, I think eventually, you know, some things have to change in the Salvadorian soccer to kind of make that next step. And hopefully it'll get there sooner than later.
So I have a few questions for you, because we always hear about the cliches of CONCACAF and the trips from the U.S. side. From the other side, like when you're hosting U.S. or you're hosting Mexico or Canada, do you hear about their hotel alarms being set off? Do you hear about the fans celebrating outside their window to make, like, the American players make it sound very tough? On the other side, do you even notice that? Is that even a
factor?
Or do
you feel that advantage? You're like, oh, we got you.
There's definitely an advantage. This, you know, especially I can only say from whenever we play in El Salvador against teams like Mexico, U.S., the fans are crazy. You know, they're gonna do stuff like that.
Is it like organized? Is it like
do they reach out to you on Facebook or anything like that? Do you get like messages where they're gotta win,
yeah,
Arturo, you have to win?
Oh well, yeah. Messages like that you do get. Yeah. You know that something along those lines is gonna happen.
Right.
Something's gonna happen to the other national team. So, but you know, it's a great atmosphere in the stadiums. You know, it's really loud. Obviously, you know, a lot of objects being thrown or whatnot. But hey, that's part of the CONCACAF. Yeah.
So when you go to Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, is it the same experience for the El Salvador team when you're on the road like it is for the U.S.?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, they don't.
It's so it's not an anti-U.S. thing.
Yeah, it's not like exactly. Okay. They do it to whatever team is playing against their national team. So
what's your favorite trip so far in CONCACAF been?
I don't know. I think playing against Panama in Panama, it's been, because there's like a small rivalry between Panama and El Salvador, because a few years back, El Salvador, we beat Panama to keep them out of the last six. So they always had this kind of thing against us. So it's always good to go to Panama and play Panama.
For you, had you gone back a lot before you played? Or like the experience of going to El Salvador to play for the national team, was that?
No, not at all. I think before I started playing for the national team, I was I had only been there like twice. So, you know, both of my parents are Salvadorian, but, you know, I never, you know, I was with the U.S. youth national teams until 2009, and then I started playing for El Salvador team. But it's been great.
Well, we're running out of time with you guys, but we have to ask you about the topic du jour right now, which is this tackle last night on Sunday, Nigel Young and Darlington Nagbe, and overall just the idea of red cards in MLS. It's been a big talking point for a lot of people for a while now. First of all, did you see the tackle? Were you watching the game? What were your thoughts when something like that happens? Not even that specific tackle, but just in general, when you see a guy go down like that under such a tough one.
I haven't seen the game live. I just saw it a couple of minutes ago. Was a tough tackle, you know. It's really dangerous for the player to go in that way. But yeah, it's hard to say something about it. But I think his intention was the ball, but it's not in a good way.
Arturo, you've been in this league for a while. You've seen it's had a reputation as a physical league. It seems like they're trying to get away from that. What do you think of this whole season so far? The number of red cards, the tackles that are getting red cards, this idea that Pro has an initiative in which they're trying to lessen some of these sorts of challenges.
Yeah, you know, I think first and foremost is we got to realize that it's a tough job for the referees to you know, in the middle of the game to make the right call. Obviously, we're human. We're prone to make some errors or whatnot, but. With a tackle like the one yesterday, I think it's pretty obvious. It's unacceptable. Whether you're going for the ball or not, if you miss a ball like that, the chances of hurting your opponent are pretty high. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough to see. You know, especially on a player like Nagbe. You know, but other than that, I think you know. Tackles like that shouldn't be made at all.
A guy like Nigel De Jong, he has this reputation around the world. I mean, he did in a World Cup final. When you're facing up against a player like that, do you think about that during the game?
No, not at all. If I get a ball there and we're both going 100% of her, I would not think about, okay, that's Nigel De Jong, I will go easy. I don't know. That's not my style. But we have to talk about it. It's not. We cannot allow this. You know, the ref has to be sure on that. And it's not the job of the players to decide, but it's the job of the ref to make a signal also for the other teams in the league.
You've been playing a long time here. Has the style of refereeing changed? I mean, back in the day, it seemed like there were a lot of tackles coming in where you were cringing a little bit and saying, "Oh boy, we gotta protect some guys." But that kind of seemed like it was the DNA of the league at some points, way back.
It's tough to say because I think soccer is a contact sport.
Yep.
And so, you know, you're gonna have your players that are more aggressive than others, but. You know, I think you have to see the intention, or you know, it hurts to kind of be that player that has that reputation that you know that's done some really bad tackles in the past before. So you know, in your question about you know how do you feel about playing a guy you know like Nigel De Jong, you know, you're not gonna play. You know, obviously you're gonna go in hard as well, but you also know that he's capable of hurting you. So. But it's part of the game as well. So it's tough to say, but at the same time, it's like I think, you know, as me being a soccer player and, you know, playing the game, you can also control yourself as well just a bit.
All right. One thing before we get out of here, DC United up next week and you guys are headed home. What's this season look like for you? What's the – you know, every club comes into a season saying, we see this and we see a progression going this way. Pauno. Where has he kind of led the path for you?
I think we play Montreal.
Do you? Did yeah. I look at the wrong? Oh, you do. I have Drogba underlined in big letters right now. Yeah, no, you're right.
We know it's our hours. Paying attention now.
Yes. I checked the schedule.
About that. I didn't want to call you out, but no, I didn't know how to do it. I didn't
that's
know
how you do yeah, it. Yeah, I saw you like bringing your finger up. I was like, wait
if
a minute.
If you're free, Mondays and Thursdays we record, we'd love for you to replace
Yeah, I mean, you can like fact check. Come on. Drogba, though? You looking forward to that? It's going to be his first game or second game this year. I guess he played at Dallas.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's a tough job to stop him. Of course, we have to work hard. We have to help each other to defend. We have to defend as a team, and hopefully win the game. Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about DC or Montreal?
Yeah, well,
or just playing against Drogba.
Well, we played DC after Montreal.
Yeah, yeah. I was on the right track.
So he was
yeah,
use
I was
it.
On the right track.
You know, obviously Montreal has had a good start to the season. You know, really attacking team. They've been getting good results. It's gonna be difficult. Drogba, it's dangerous. You know. You know, he might not be in the best, game rhythm right now. He hasn't a lot of, but at the same time, you just got to be aware of him. But, you know, I think we're doing a good job defensively. You know, obviously we've had three shutouts in the last three games. And we just got to continue on that, keep building, keep getting better. And, you know, at home we have to go for the win. So hopefully we can get that W.
There you have it. Montreal, not DC United. Johan Kapiloff. Arturo Alvarez, guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having us.
Big thanks to Arturo and Johan for joining us here. Make sure you pay attention midweek. Three big games on Wednesday, all of them on MLS Live. Started off, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, Sporting Kansas City hosting the Colorado Rapids. A big one there. KC at the top of the table. Portland, FC Dallas. That's a juicy one, a rematch of last year's Western Conference final, championship, whatever you want to call it. And then San Jose Red Bulls. Very interesting game there. Can the Red Bulls bounce back? Can they handle Quincy and Wando in the game? There are some question marks for them there right now. Any questions, anything at all, hit us up at Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. We come back right in the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You showed up a groove. And I know that you did.
Back on Extra Time Radio. Getting a little funky. Into the mailbag. And before we jump in here, guys, I just saw a tweet from Sporting Kansas City in which they're hyping these throwback different jerseys and whatever else they're giving away on Wednesday, which is the anniversary of their 20 years of their first ever game. It's all Wiz stuff. I remember a day when you couldn't give away KC Wizards gear in Kansas City, and now all the responses on these tweets are basically, if you don't show up immediately at game time, you're going to walk away empty-handed. Things done changed. Lead us in there. Dave, what do we got?
Well, we have an email from Robert McFadden. I teased a little bit in the first segment, but his point, and he was saying, I'm more upset with Arena than Nigel De Jong. I've always had quite a bit of respect for him. I lost half of it when he signed De Jong, and now the other half has gone. We all knew it was only a matter of time before he sent someone off on the litter or a wheelchair in this case. Bruce knew exactly who he was bringing into the league, and it didn't seem to bother him one bit. It's a sentiment that we've heard from a few different people.
I will say the return address on this one is from Portland.
Yeah, he says, I'm a Timbers fan. I know I might be biased, but
Dave.
Hey, everyone comes from their own point. Let's talk underrated players because that was a big conversation. And we got a bunch of emails. We got a lot of different names, and one of the common themes is, and it's not a surprise, and is that they're goalkeepers, and a lot of them are American. Mm. And people are talking about Brian Rowe, Clint Irwin, Zach McMath, Josh Saunders, different guys. So I'm not going to talk goalkeepers because I don't know. I think it's a tough position to go with. So here are a few names we got. We got Richie Marquez from Glenn in Mannheim, which I think is a decent shout. We also, to stick with the Union, Brian Carroll, 349 MLS appearances and counting, 4 Supporter Shields, 2 MLS Cups.
I think Carroll's probably – he's probably properly rated, especially for those people who watched the league, you know, a decade ago and when he was really, really in his prime. I mean, solid, gets it done. Probably not a guy at this point in the league at this age that you want to start. Richie Marquez, Doyle, he strikes me as one that just hasn't been around long enough. You know what I mean? Like, if he'd had a year and a half of starts under his belt and still nobody was talking about him, then I'd certainly give him that underrated tag. But he's gotten some hype.
He has, and he's played well. I think the Union need to be a winning team first before you can say he's underrated. And look, they're on the way to that. I think Ken Trevette, who's been his central defensive partner, has been really good as well. And they have the good fortune to play in front of UConn's own Andre Blake.
Yes.
So moving on from a UConn reference as necessary, Nicholas Gravel, and he says, I think Kevin Molina is one of the most underrated players in the league. He keeps his game simple. He doesn't rack up goals. I think
Wait, what? Kevin Molino keeps his game simple.
This is what Nicholas says.
Kevin Molino, that the head down dribbler who's never seen a 1v3 that he didn't want to at least attempt.
Andrew's attacking your hot boy. Is there anything you'd like to say?
No, I think that's kind of probably where some of that hot boy vibe comes from, is that he's willing to give it a try. You know, somebody sees that outfit in the mirror and says, nope, not for me. Kevin says, I'll take it on and I'll make it work. I think he just hasn't had a chance yet, right? He was injured.
Okay. Last player, AJ De La Garza mentioned, but this is a key one. Austin sends us an email and he says, we can talk underrated players, but let's talk most underrated interview, because he has to throw Mike McGee in consideration. Mm, yeah, he was awesome on ETR last week. His interview following the DeJong shenanigans was incredible. He should have won man of the match just for his ability to answer questions 100% honestly and with class, while also not throwing his teammates under the bus. Not that anyone would have blamed him to. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Yeah. Austin, good call.
Yeah, man. That was one of the little side angles of this whole DeJong Nagby thing that was, I don't use the word impressive, it's just a guy who clearly has the ability to speak under pressure, but that was one of the most awkward interview scenarios that I've ever seen, to have McGee sit there while, you know, Holden and as well as Stoner just go after DeJong in this tackle. That was tough, and props to Mike
He handled himself with class and professionalism, and look, Mike McGee, he's a freaking champion. He's been awesome in these interviews for more than a decade now, and hopefully he'll be around the league for another 30 years.
He's a favorite for a reason.
So to close out, we are going to get back to Marlon Argueta. He sent us an email about tucking in shirts, not tucking in shirts, and I'm doing a little bit of side research to get a good answer for him on this one, so that will be coming up in the next show.
What's he want to know? What's the overall?
Well, he said it, he said he watched the RSL game supporting his local guy, Kyle Beckerman, he's told us about, and he said, apart from Chris Wingert, every other player did not have their shirt tucked in, which is fine. And that's
I don't plan a tucked in shirt.
Well, so then I started asking some questions to some former players
about
rules in the league and conduct and style. And so we got to get a good answer for a serious question, such as tucking in shirts.
If you've got anything, if you can help us out at all on this one, go ahead. Let us know any observations, anything of that nature. Personally, always untucked. It's just, it feels weird.
You're a slob. That's why.
Yeah. It feels weird. Have it tucked in.
You tuck in the shirt so that the ref.
I mean, the other day I tucked my shirt in to come in for the show, and you reamed me out.
That was different. That was a style thing. This is about gamesmanship. I tuck in the shirt because I'm a true number 10, and everyone's always pulling on my shirt to foul me.
You just want
to
show.
And I want the referee to know.
See a willow in the wind.
He's holding me.
Okay.
And no blood, no foul.
Yeah,
but
okay, whatever, whatever. A true number 10 was sitting in this this studio earlier. Arturo Alvarez, big thanks to him, Johan Kappelhoff, as well of the Chicago Fire. Make sure you tune in midweek. Make sure you head to MLSstore.com for all your swag needs. Still got a lot. Still want to give it out. Add extra time, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. With that, we will see you Thursday.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.